You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 22nd, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing my Zumbas. I am kicking back. Didn't shave today. Didn't brush my hair. Didn't brush my teeth. So casual. But not so casual that we don't have Cliff Schechter with us today, ladies and gentlemen. Also, on the eve of the eve of the Oscars. What does anybody know what night it is? Sunday night?
It is Sunday night.
We are bringing back to the program our Oscar expert. Of course, I'm referring to Chris Rosen from, I think now he's at Huffington Post. He will give us a Oscar preview. Also on the program today, that speech by John Kerry, what will it mean for Keystone? The sequester, 1 week away. Get ready for it, folks. If you fly in particular, you're going to feel it. Pat Robertson really taking apart this whole myth of global warming. And a report as to why the Pope may actually be stepping down. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Just a little bit of house cleaning, or housekeeping, I guess. In the coming weeks, as we mentioned in the email blast today, and if you don't get our emails, good way to just keep up with what's going on with the show. You can sign up for it at majority.fm at the bottom of the page. You just put your name in there. As many of you know by this point, I am anticipating the birth of not just my, but our second child. And as such, we don't know when that's going to happen. We decided not to schedule it, which actually some people do. Some people actually go in, and but we did not schedule it. We don't know when he'll be coming, but it's sometime probably, well, certainly in the next 3 weeks, due in a couple of weeks. When that happens, we may have a little forewarning, we may not, but we will endeavor to have a mix of different product for you during the time where I am out, and just wanted to give you a heads up on that. Also, a reminder, it is your support for this program that keeps it alive, period. End of story. And so, if you can afford to become a member, please, at majority.fm, sign up. You can become a member. What are you going to?
You were talking about the baby, and then you went, it's your support of the show that keeps it alive.
No, the show alive.
Well, to be fair.
Well, in some ways, I guess that's true. I don't want to put too much of a heavy burden on you folks, but if you want this kid to eat... become a member today. If you cannot afford it, send us an email. we will work out a deal with you at majorityreporters@gmail.com. I don't want finance to be a reason for you not to have access to the full show when and if you want it. But please, if you can afford to become a member, please do. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back, Sam Seder on Majority Report. People are now no. All right, folks. Before we get to Cliff Schechter, of course, we need the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, LibertasLLC.com.
The promotion. Yes. I love that reefer cake.
That's it's the thing that's got everybody singing in the showers. Cliff, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I want to make a special offer out there to everybody. Every dollar you send me, I will give 10 cents to Sam Seder to help raise his next child. So I want you to all keep that in mind. I'll get you the address before the end of the show. A dollar to me. 10 cents to Sam's kid. Can there really be two better causes than me and Sam's kid? I can't think of any. You know, myself.
Cliff had a very good idea when we hooked him up on the phone system. He said the other way you can support this show is provide free babysitting for my child. In fact, we could actually do a program where if you you become a Sam Seder member, level member, which is our top tier of membership at the Majority Report. I'd even contemplate giving the kid for a couple of months just until, you know, until he's old enough to, you know, sort of take care of himself.
Yeah, quite frankly, for those of us who've had kids before, and you all know this out there, they're just little blobs of clay for the first few months anyhow. The kid won't miss Sam.
No, absolutely not. I was saying that the other day. I said the exact same. I think I used blobs of clay is the exact same phrase I used. And there couldn't be anything less relevant to a newborn than dad.
That's right. Mom matters for a whole host of reasons that we won't get into in this PG-rated show.
Indeed.
Because there could be some conservatives out there that the whole breastfeeding thing, that they're still catching up on that.
Right. When are we going to outlaw that?
We need to ban that because Janet Jackson once showed her nipple. So indeed. You wouldn't want to, you know, do that. But that does happen, and the mom is important because of that. The dad, there's a point somewhere along the way where your kid looks at you for the first time and actually says, "Dad," and it's kind of a cool moment. You're like, wow, they know I'm here.
Yes.
Because I've been covered in their poop and vomit now for months.
Well, actually, in my case, it happened when my first daughter was, I think, about 5 and a half.
I wish I could top that with a joke.
Yeah,
but
no,
I think
she said, "I've noticed that you've been around here for quite some time."
I thought you walking with a bellhop. Who is this guy? Yeah,
exactly. But I was just showing. We'll get on. Yeah, right. Yeah. I've noticed you've been here for a long time. Now get me some juice.
The car keys. I was like, hey, can you go
get me something to eat? Go get the what?
Aren't you the guy that provided the bagels? Who
right,
are you?
Exactly. My daughter has a fixation with mermaids now. And my wife bought her a set of mermaid flippers, you know, like the where you put both feet into the flippers. She is now literally, I kid you not, for two nights in a row, has been sleeping with the flipper on.
Oh, you got to take a picture. Man.
I've got a video of it. I've got a video.
Cool.
But maybe I'll send it to you. So, all right, let's get into this. We are a week away now from the sequester kicking in. It seems all but inevitable that it's going to happen. And there's a couple of stories that just are starting to come out in terms of what the implications of this are going to be. The biggest one, and, you know, the president, I mean, I'm of two minds of the president, as usually, of the way that, you know, in many respects, the president is as responsible as anyone for bringing us to this point, because back in 2000, early 2011, 2010, and even to this day on the White House website, there is this deficit fixation. There is this debt fixation when we are facing still a jobs crisis in this country, as well as really an infrastructure investment crisis. And the deal for the debt deal in 2011 ultimately brought us the sequester. But the administration is basically put the Republicans in an impossible situation where they would have to sign off on some type of revenue increase to avert this sequester. The Republicans won't do it. And now we see this story coming from about in the Times, I guess it was, about what's going to happen at airports. And I think this is one of the first places that Americans are going to feel this, that according to this report in the Times, essentially starting in March and certainly by the beginning of April, air travel, you are going to have to head to the airport, assuming that there is a snowstorm, essentially, because they're going to have to cut federal air control traffic controllers. They're going to have to cut TSA inspectors. And so people are going to start to feel this. Other places they won't feel it is this story in the Washington Post about the National Institute for Science, essentially, the NIH, Institutes for Health, where we are going to lose a generation of scientists, essentially, to this because of the way that grants are made. This is what are your thoughts on this, Cliff?
I'm so tired of these people. I'm so tired of the fact that we're all held back by the lowest common denominator, by the stupidest people in our society who voted in literally. And I'm sitting in a district that was redistricted. So we provided a guy that ran his campaign he was to the right of Gene Schmidt, and it worked. Like that there was space to the right of mean Gene Schmidt. My little liberal enclave here that I'm in, we have no ability to get rid of this complete jackass. I'm sure there are people going through this all around the country, but again, it doesn't really matter even if it's not your district, because we're all hurt by this. I mean, the people in the House, I mean, we're dealing with nihilists here. I mean, literally people that refuse to accept the modern age. I know we said this again and again, and so I'm not breaking any ground here. But when you see stuff like this, I mean, again, losing scientists, and I mean, really, can our airports be any less desirable than they are now? I used to love traveling. You know, I hate it now. I mean, we're already at
mandatory dentist appointment is probably the only other way. You put the dentist at the airport. And you force everyone to go to the dentist or maybe get a colonoscopy before you get on your flight.
Yeah, that potentially might be the only thing worse. I mean, maybe, you know, if they would use some of the cuts in funding, maybe to by that particular percentage to cut the groping from the TSA guys, then maybe I'd be for it.
I mean,
it just gets to a point where you just throw your hands up. And I mean, obviously, I blame the nuts for the nut house they've created, but I'm not going to let President Obama and the Democrats off the hook on this. We saw this coming, all of us who have brains. And so what was going on the right saw this, you know. I'm going to bring something up. I brought up 10,000 times on your show, which is, had they been more aggressively economically populist, you know, when President Obama was elected, when we had majorities, vast majorities in the House and the Senate, perhaps we would have avoided this. I mean, now you see OFA, you know, is doing ads and getting involved behind the gun legislation and other things, putting Republicans on the defensive around the country. And I'm so happy about that. But where were they on health care when this was needed? Where were they on the stimulus? You know, and we allowed this to happen. We allowed 2010 to happen, and we're going to suffer for what was allowed to happen in 2010 for decades.
And
because of governors in places in big states like Florida and Ohio and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania that are just complete loons that should be nowhere near that kind of power, for the state legislatures that took over and redistricted, so because of what we're dealing with. I mean that's what gets me, the short-sighted stupidity of being so cautious and so corporatist and allowing 2010 to happen. I mean, you know, again, I'm much happier with President Obama these days. I'm happy with the issues he's taken on. I'm happy with the way he framed the State of the Union. And I give credit where credit is due, but I'm still not fully over my anger at the incompetence of his political team and what they allowed, frankly, his policy team and what they allowed to happen. Because, I mean, you know, this is the results of that. We're going to have to live with this for a long time.
Not to rehash this stuff, but it's important to bring it up so that there's some type of context. I mean, time and time again, we were saying on this program, I mean, I was having arguments in the green room at MSNBC and Jonathan Alter on Rattigan at different times, saying that even if we are to believe the narrative that the stimulus couldn't have been bigger, that there could have been no difference from a legislative standpoint, rhetorically, we are in this fix. Okay, you have right now, according to Pew polls, that only 43% of those polled had heard a little about sequesters that on March 1st are going to start. Of those questioned on the topic, 40% would let them take effect, 49% would delay them. About half of the survey said Republicans in Congress would be more to blame for the spending reductions versus 31% who would blame President Obama. So at least on that level, in the past month or two, we have heard more rhetoric coming from the White House so that the Republicans are going to be blamed for this on some level. But we also have polls that are showing that essentially Americans, the deficit is their biggest concern. Pew poll came out with another thing that said 76% say the president and Congress should focus on a combination of spending cuts and tax increases to reduce the budget deficit. They found, I think I read this poll the other day, that 76% of those people also, 70% say it's the say that it's the most important issue that the government faces right now. Then 51%. For major immigration, 46% on gun legislation, just 34% say it's essential to set new federal policies dealing with climate change. This is a fully a reflection of the failure of the president to use the bully pulpit to explain to the American people just what is really important. And so
that's exactly right. I mean, look at what's happening now that he is starting to do that. Look at what's happened. Not to say that, I mean, Newtown was a huge deal, and obviously, you know, efforts by Mayor Bloomberg, who again I like to, whenever I talk about this, to remind people that I do work for Mayors Against Illegal Guns, has been huge on that. But on that issue, a big part of what has changed is because the president and vice president and others have spoken out so forcefully on this. The bully pulpit is so important. It sets the agenda. The president has access to a public relations machine and to coverage in a way that no one else comes close to. And again, I think, and I won't even accept, frankly, that things couldn't have been different in that, you know, we've talked about this, I know, on the show ad nauseum, but in the end, to break the 60-vote filibuster on the stimulus, President Obama needed, what did he need in the end of that time? He needed one vote. I think there were 59 Democrats at that particular point in time. And in the end, he ended up getting 62 because he got both of the main Republicans and he got Arlen Specter. Well, you know what? If he had gone to Maine, a state he had won overwhelmingly, and he had gone, an Arlen Specter, who eventually became a Democrat, had gone to Pennsylvania, but had also gone to Ohio and Indiana and many other states that he had won with the Republican representatives, Florida, and made that case rhetorically and blamed them for every single person who was out of work at that point was going to be on them from that moment on, I am convinced he would have gotten a half dozen Republicans in those states from people scared about their own reelections against a president at that point who had a 75% to 80% approval rating from the honeymoon. And again, it wasn't done. And have things changed? You know, our good friend, you and my good friend, Bill Scheer, made a compelling argument, not in some ways, in the piece he wrote for the New York Times, one that you and I largely disagreed with, but there were parts of it that made sense, that yes, it helps when you've got corporate partners in different venues. It helps, but it's who you work with. You know what I mean? It was where I disagreed with Bill, and it was how you use the bully pulpit, which is where I disagreed with him. FDR may have worked with some of the corporate guys, but he was still standing up every day and using the fireside chats to frame the debate about who the bad guys were and who the good guys were. And his Justice Department was prosecuting some of the bad guys,
right,
also, which sends a pretty damn strong statement. And because he was doing that,
carrot and stick does not work if you don't have a stick as well.
That's right, and that's exactly right. You can work with these guys, and again, I don't want to get into the whole thing. To me, pharma wasn't who you should have worked with on the healthcare bill. It's all the other guys that get screwed by pharma. I mean, it's all the investment bankers and guys who you wouldn't work with on Wall Street regulation. You'd work with pharma perhaps on that, but on regulation of the healthcare companies, they're the ones paying enormous premiums for their workers. They have a motivation to not do that. But I don't want to get into all that, but just the point is that when FDR came in, the bigger election, because people saw FDR as on their side, wasn't just 32. It was 34 and 36 that were wipeouts for the Republicans that allowed all that great legislation to happen. And I'm still of the belief that had the Democrats acted differently, had President Obama set that agenda and his team, as he's doing now in a much more difficult climate because the Republicans are in control of much more, had he done that after the 2008 election, that the populism would have been on the side of Democrats. They could have blamed Republicans for holding every single thing up they held up. They would have still passed many bills. And 2010 and 2012 look entirely different. 2012 obviously went well. I think it could have even gone much better, yep, as a continuation of 2010. And obviously, look, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't sit here and say I know things would have happened that way. But they did once before historically. I know the right had just as much money, if not more. Things were more deregulated in terms of campaign finance, believe it or not, even than they are now. Back then, you had the DuPonts and others pouring billions of dollars into attacking FDR back then. The only argument I'll listen to from people is that TV didn't exist back then. And obviously, TV now is an emotional platform with video. Video goes to people's emotions. And yeah, so there's some things that maybe the corporate guys can do now that they couldn't fully do back then. But believe me, when it came to talk radio and mail and all sorts of other things, they got away with a lot of things back then, and they throw everything. They threw everything they could at FDR.
Right.
So it's, you know, that's the stuff that just, you know, and again, I didn't mean to take 15 minutes to get back into this because we've discussed it before, but that's the stuff that frustrates me, because that's our scientists, generation of scientists you're talking about that we're going to lose. You know, that's what we're talking about at airports right now. And frankly, those are two stories, but there's a million other stories like,
yes,
that.
Yes.
And we're going through this now because we're dealing with people who got elected, who never should have been elected, who are not serious people. They're not real people. They're not people that should ever be representing us in government, and yet they are.
And
that's where we are.
And not just, you know, like you say, this is a Republican, this is a Democratic issue, but also, frankly, we have this huge not to get you in trouble with the mayors of gun violence, but we also have this huge so-called centrist ideology that is really ultimately a way of protecting the big money here. And, you know, on Monday, I think we're going to have the executive director of Kick the Can. You know, they're the Fix the Debt Junior set, I guess, is what they are. I mean, I'm not maligning them. I'm saying I think that's literally who they are. And their whole sort of the debt is going to crush us, this whole talk is what is bringing about, what is going to be bringing about these cuts. Now, the real question in my mind, looking forward from a political standpoint, is will the president be able to get out there and really hang these cuts around the Republicans' neck and also be able to sort of use this as a teachable moment as to the efficacy and the need and the desire that Americans have for government services. I mean, it is going to be fascinating to watch when you start to hear these stories about the double lines at security in the airports. They're going to have to take, you know, what happens when you have a snowstorm or any type of serious weather in any of the major hubs of our airports is essentially what happens is that they say, okay, we have planes that land, and I'm just pulling numbers out of my, you know, arbitrary numbers, but we have planes that land every 2 minutes. We're going to have to have, we're going to separate these planes, and they're going to land every 6 minutes. And when you cut down on the number of air traffic controllers, you have to do the same thing. And they're going to be cutting traffic controllers, you're going to be furloughing them, so you're going to have about 10% less traffic, air traffic controllers. God forbid,
which is also very good for safety.
Well, I was going to say, God forbid we don't end up having an accident because of this. But you're going to see people, and the real question is going to be, is there going to be a connection made between the fact that when you go to the airport, you're going to be sitting on that tarmac for, on average, another 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
And that's the frustration for me.
And I wonder if like the media is going to report it this way. You know, I mean, it's like the question is the media going to report this? Because you know they're going to send people out to the airports. Are they going to say, this is the sequester when the rubber meets the road?
But that's the point, Sam, and that's what I'm saying here and talking about, you know, when it comes to the bully pulpit. Because will the press report it? That is where the president makes such a huge difference. Is that he needs to bridge that gap, to get it from where people understand that this sequester is what it is that's making them sit an extra 20 minutes on that tarmac, all right? Because the way public policy works, and I do this on all the issues that I work on, which is people need to understand how the certain things not being passed or being passed affect their lives. If it's all just sort of inside Washington stuff, most people who have real lives and don't pay attention to this stuff because they don't have the time to, don't put that together. It's our job to put that together for them, and in my opinion, the president's job more than anybody's, right, to get up and say, here is why you're sitting on the tarmac. Here is why you are now more danger when you step on an airplane. It's because of what they are doing. And I'll tell you, you know, like obviously I come back to New York a lot. My family's there and I've got clients there and, you know, good pals like yourself. And, you know, Kennedy Airport's a freaking mess as it is right now. I mean, essentially when I fly back, if I have to fly out of Kennedy, I just assume that I try to get the earliest flight in the day, because if you wait till like 6 or 7 o'clock at night, forget about it.
Right.
With all the different delays that add up from stuff going on earlier in the day, I've found that it's almost at 100% clip. I won't get off the tarmac on time.
And you know what I mean?
And that's only going to get worse now.
I want to note that I certainly appreciate your using the forget about it in the context of JFK.
I thought about that, and I realized I just said forget about it like a Cincinnatian.
Right.
That's what happens when you're in the Midwest for too long. I need to go back to my New York roots.
Let's pivot.
Forget about it. Was that better?
No, okay. it's good. Forget about it. You can throw it away. But let's pivot, because, you know, part of this, of course, is that the Republicans are in a box of their own making where they don't have the ability to deal with this. Their congressional approval is at about half of what it is for the president. So he clearly has the advantage here, and hopefully he'll press it.
I think it's much lower than half. Isn't the congressional approval at like 13% or something at this point?
I don't know. It may be at 22%. I'm not quite sure. Either way, the problem that they're having, there was a couple of sort of perfect examples this week of the problem that Republicans are having, and and I've said this, I've used this this frame multiple times, but the Frankenstein that they have created is now running amok in the village. And they cannot control the Frankenstein. And so you see this. We saw this with John McCain. He had a couple of town halls this week where the first one was where he basically got lambasted for not building a wall. And his trying to explain to the morons that he basically empowered. Remember, this is the guy, when we talk about John McCain, put aside the John McCain who has his own permanently endowed seat on Meet the Press. But this is also the guy who essentially took Sarah Palin out.
He only
out
had to donate, by the way, 20% more crankiness to them to get that endowed seat.
Exactly. This is a guy who lifted Sarah Palin out of obscurity and validated all of the Republican base and all of their moronic and frankly, moronic and heartless, tendencies. And now, when he goes back to Arizona, he's got to feel the wrath of it. Here is a woman who is standing up at a town hall. She is the mother of one of the people killed in the Aurora shooting in Colorado. And listen to the crowd's reaction when McCain answers her on assault weapons. Here it is.
24-year-old son, Alex, was murdered in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. These assault weapons allow a shooter to fire many rounds without having to reload. These weapons do not belong on our streets.
I can tell you right now, you need some straight talk. That assault weapons ban will not pass the Congress of the United States. I owe it to give you my opinion, because the majority of members of Congress don't support it.
McCain told the crowd of his plans to deal with mass shootings.
We are working together to try to come up with a package that would prevent guns from falling into the hands of criminals, but at the same time, preserving our Second Amendment rights.
Now, there's two things here. One, okay, you could perhaps say, well, McCain was just being honest, and that's fine. But the crowd cheering at the fact that this woman who is up there saying this, and that there won't be an assault ban, they're not cheering for his honesty. They're shouting down this woman.
Evil people, all right, and they've proven it again and again. I mean, you know, I wrote a column way back when about all the different Republican debates, all the people who cheer, yay, a guy fell off his motorcycle and is going to die. And, you know, yay, well, you know, you're too bad, you're gay, you can't get into the military. I mean, they're evil, hateful, resentful people, right? People can pretend in the little beltway that the Tea Party is a legitimate movement based upon actual, like, logical grievances, or they can look at what it really is. A bunch of displaced, and it's, you know, this is where the ideology comes from. There are other people who are part of it who fit this, but it's displaced, old, white, angry, rural guys that are losing everything, all their power and privilege that they've enjoyed in this country, to be able to screw up constantly and yet live accountability-free lives while telling everybody else how they should live. You can't have an abortion. You can't get married because you're gay. You can't do this. You can't do that. I can F up my life a million times. I can be Pete Domenici, go around screwing my buddy's daughter and producing children and lie about it while I'm trying to impeach Bill Clinton. That's what's going on there. So these are people who, how dare you? Your son get killed? I don't really care. You're going to touch my assault weapon, because that's their privilege. You know, they're old white people. They get to hold on to their guns. It doesn't really matter how many of the rest of us die. It doesn't matter if there's an epidemic in Chicago because of guns coming in from Indiana, or Washington, D.C., because of guns coming in from Virginia, or the rest, you know, that doesn't matter. It's their world. We just have to live in it. And sadly for them, that's not the case anymore, because there's more of us, and we're voting, which is why they're trying to stop that at the polls right now.
Well, what also strikes me as, you know, in the second part of what McCain had to say is, and I've had this conversation, I had this debate with a caller yesterday who was saying that they had a problem with the New York State a ban on military assault weapons and military style assault weapons. And I said, well, why? I mean, what is the downside of this? And he's saying this is a slippery slope. And it's like, you know, the Supreme Court, I don't necessarily agree with their ruling, but they have ruled on this. There is a Second Amendment, you know, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, that allows for people to have firearms. And so the idea that the Second Amendment is in danger is ludicrous. There's
right, but and even if there wasn't, if Scalia hadn't given that decision, which is an ahistoric decision, and you know, and just accepted the previous interpretation, including the one by conservative scholars, that it's a group right, It doesn't matter because of the history of this country, because of how many people own guns. I mean, yeah, things are changing in some ways, but no one's coming to people's houses to take it. Because, you know, if they wanted to, that's just not going to happen in this country. So it doesn't really matter. All right. The slippery slope argument really is one of the most intellectually lazy and stupidest arguments, because I could use that on anything.
Right.
I mean, take any law on any subject. Oh, it's a slippery slope. You know, what will they do next? You know what I mean? I mean, it's just dumb.
Right, we've got a speed limit. The next thing we know, we're not going to be able to get. They're going to take away our cars.
That's right. Democracy is about finding the place in that slippery slope where we're willing to pass laws that reflect our will and our values.
Right.
All right. So it's just a stupid argument that I can't even believe anybody that listens to your show, who all are, by the way, very intelligent people.
Well,
I can't believe somebody would make that kind of an argument, because it's pathetic. Well, I can make that argument on anything.
We take all comers here. We do actually have a specific conservative hotline, 646-257-3920, which we'll get to the calls later in the program. But, you know, the getting back to this theme that they have created this monster, essentially, and they can't stop it. I mean, just sort of pivoting, when we talk about, you know, there's stories about how we're going to look for a Tea Party brawl. It's not enough that the Republican base is at odds with those sort of national Republicans. You know, that's why I think McCain gets so testy when he goes back to Arizona, because he's not used to being questioned in any way. He's used to having David Gregory basically say, hey, these are the four things I'm going to ask you today.
When he does get questioned, he calls his wife a trollop. I'm not going to say.
But
that's exactly right. He's not, and it's almost amusing to watch this, because they've lost control of this thing. You've already got this wealthy businessman in Mike in Kentucky is talking about taking on Mitch McConnell from the right. Which, oh, yep. I'm so excited for that. I may donate money to this guy just to watch them beat each other. And McCain is obviously a victim of that too. But by picking Sarah Palin, he helped whip this whole thing up.
Yes.
And again, to listen to him, obviously most people probably know my history of writing a book on John McCain. I just cringe every time I hear him pull out crap from that brand that the media was giving to him that was never true in 2008, when they were allowing him to call himself a straight talker. Let me give you some straight talk. You know, like the straight talk that he's given on his four different positions on immigration and guns, and taxes on the wealthy and abortion rights and gay rights. I mean, you know, he's not a straight talker. OK, folks, I can find any number of metaphors to give you, but he's a liar is what he is. He's like everybody else and used a brand that was granted to him that he never deserved. So it really just even annoys me to hear him say that, as if anybody out there still believes that he's a straight talker after the way he's behaved the last few years. I'll just, you know, to quote John Stewart on that, he spent the last 7 years pretty much making sure to undo the legacy of any good thing he ever did.
Right. So, which frankly, you know, the guy does not have terribly impressive legislative record. But the metaphor, McCain is a walking metaphor for the problem of the Republican Party, because here's a guy with national aspirations, but he was essentially dragged down by the very thing that he had to cling to maintain, you know, to keep himself from getting completely crushed in that election, which was, you know, Sarah Palin and everything she represented. And the same thing is happening. There was an amazing story this week. I covered it, but I want to get your reaction to it. Was this whole Friends of Hamas thing, where you had Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, you know, the two guys vying for the Tea Party mantle, I guess, in 2016. It
can't wait
until
they fight it out, too.
Indeed.
That's going to be lots of fun.
But Rand Paul was talking about, I think he actually said, you know, we need to look into this Friends of Hamas thing. Ted Cruz was certainly, he didn't use the words Friends of Hamas, but he was saying, like, to Hagel during those hearings, I want to hear who you've been talking to and getting paid from. And it was clearly because of this report that he thought that he had this sort of bombshell about Friends of Hamas, which turns out to be essentially the right-wing media sort of picking up on what was literally a joke and running with it.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, and running with it. And no one along that food chain, from Ben Shapiro and the Senate sources that he supposedly had, and nobody throughout that food chain, all the way up to Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, and nobody decided to say, hey, I'm going to take 20 minutes and just see if I can't find out if this thing exists, because it sounds ridiculous.
That's right. Well, I mean, and that ties into our earlier conversation. Again, the people who are in office at this point on the right, and there are obviously there are exceptions to this. There are good people who just happen to disagree with us on some things, but many of them, particularly ones put into office in 2010, they're not real people. They're clowns. They don't have an interest in governing.
Well, clowns are people too.
I'm sorry, clowns are people too. That's true. There used to be a whole conservative party that was interested in actually governing and disagreed with us on many things. You know, those are the people like Dick Lugar who they've thrown out of office. So we've got all these people in Congress, and John McCain, in probably the worst of his many sins, was going to elevate one of those people to vice president beyond just being in Congress, which is bad enough. And so, of course, someone like Rand Paul doesn't stop to think, or Ted Cruz, they don't stop to think about whether something's true or not. They don't care. That their agenda isn't passing good legislation and getting to the truth of matters. They're part of the entertainment complex on the right. It's about promoting themselves. It's about furthering their eventual income base. You know what I mean? It's about riling people up. It has nothing to do with actually solving any of our policy problems. And obviously, you've got a whole infrastructure of little media folks on the right who they never spent a day in journalism school. They never spent a day as a journalist. They're not interested in that. So, I mean, Ben Shapiro, you know, we went through him last week. I mean, you know, he's in the thralls of puberty right now. He's got other things to worry about. I mean, again, you know what I mean? I mean, he sees that girl across the hall at the high school dance. Will she talk to him? Should he go get her some punch? There's all sorts of questions going through little Ben.
Yeah, my guess is she won't. But listen, we just have a couple of minutes left. And I know, you know, sort of the tie these things together, the way that the Republicans, you know, sort of caught in this sort of death spiral that I still contend they are in. The way that they're going to attempt to hold any modicum of power, they have done so through gerrymandering and they continue to harp on this voter ID. There was an amazing story out of your neck of the woods in Ohio, where you have a Hamilton County prosecutor is going after these group of voter fraudsters who apparently dress it in habits. Is that right? I'm talking about this nun.
I'm sorry, I lost you for a second. What did you say?
You've got a Hamilton County prosecutor who is going after a nun, and they're going to try and build the voter fraud case against her.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for bringing that up. That's exactly right.
And tell us the story.
I'm sorry?
Tell us about the story.
Yeah, well, they're holding hearings here right now. You know, the voting board, and really what it is it's a witch hunt on the right to try to do what they're trying to do in numerous swing states, in numerous swing areas, and Hamilton County, where I live in Cincinnati, is an area that used to be Republican that now Obama's won twice. Sherrod Brown won it in 2012 and hadn't 2006. It's trending like all other suburbs and cities, even, you know, to be a part of the Democratic coalition. And they realize that this state's going to remain viable for them. They need to do what they can to try to disenfranchise huge numbers of voters. So here they literally right now are going after a nun because she may have turned in a voter an absentee ballot from a member of this group, the Sisters of Mercy, this group of nuns, and one of the nuns passed away. And so she may have accidentally turned in her voter in a pile of these votes, may have turned in one of these other – one of a vote of someone who passed away. That and like two other cases they've got, you know, as it always is the pretext to trying to disenfranchise thousands of people. And guess who? I bet you can guess who those people are they're trying to disenfranchise.
My guess is they're not nuns.
No, they're not nuns. My guess is that that's going on here. And this, you know, again, this is a local thing, but this is why the national party needs to pay attention to these local things because who gets elected Secretary of State in places like Ohio and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and who is in the state legislature has national implications. And this is what these guys sometimes miss. So I hope they pay attention to this. The people here I know are fighting the good fight, you know, progressives are, to try to stop this from happening. But really, people should be looking around them all over the place, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and these other states where the right took over and gerrymandered in 2010, because I promise you this is going on everywhere. If they'll try to go after a nun here, they'll do it everywhere.
Right. And just so the people understand the details of this, the nun requested an absentee ballot. She filled it out. She died before the election and before, you know, after it was sent off. And so I guess the other nuns had brought it, you know, had brought them all in. And now they're talking about this is a perfect case of voter fraud. You've got,
right.
You've probably got, I mean, the potential for millions of nuns
like
to do this
to
around
me,
around the country. It's just.
I think there's a conspiracy of nuns around the country. I think I sense RICO being used here. We want to. It's like a mob. We want to bring out and really see if we can find the coalition of 85-year-old nuns that have conspired to undermine the country by predicting when their colleagues might pass away and getting absentee ballots from them ahead of time.
Now, I'm going to put something out there, Cliff, before you got to go. And you don't have to say anything because this is a touchy subject. Do you think it's possible this is why the Pope resigned?
being that you should I bring up the pun of touchy subject that you just used, or no?
Well, I will be getting to that touchy subject a little bit later.
I think whether the subject was touched or not is much more the reason why the Pope resigned.
Very possibly. Well, Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Sammy. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Fearless Cliff Schechter, taking on the Pope.
Fearless.
All right, we'll see you soon. Bye.
Take care, bro.
Bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, and when we return...
You know, these children getting violently violated and molested, that's okay, but this nun given this voter form...
Right, right. Let's bring it out, the big guns. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I believe, if all goes well, sometimes you never know with this guy, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter, and we have... I'm Cliff Schechter. We'll be talking to Chris Rosen, who will be giving us some Oscar picks. And we have a number of Chris Rosen theme songs to play this week.
Two.
All right.
Two.
All right. We'll be right back after this.
You're going to play the old one, too, right?
Yeah, we should play the old one,
too. Okay. We'll be right back after this. Right back after this. We're back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Now, Google's got this thing now where, you know, you call with a video calling and it puts you into a Google Hangout. The funny thing is I forgot that on this new computer that we've hooked up here, I don't have a video camera. I can see Chris Rosen. He cannot see me. Before I tell you what I see, which I got to say does not look good. We're going to first play some Chris Rosen theme songs that have come in. Are you ready for this, Chris?
Absolutely, Sam.
Okay. All right, we got a bunch of them. Which one are we starting with?
Do you want to start with the old
one? Let's start with the old one.
Kristen Rosen of MovieLine.com.
That makes me a movie phone.
Big shot senior editor.
Vertical editor.
Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room, watching movies, and you dress like a slob.
I'm actually in an office now.
Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask. You said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
All right, well, that is the traditional one. Now, of course, he's moved
classic.
On. That's the classic. Now we've got a scary one that somebody sent in. Who sent this in? Do you remember his name?
I'll pull it up right after we play it.
Okay, here it is. This one is a more sort of a horror version of Chris Rosen. Here you go. Wow.
That's from Dan Evans.
Dan Evans. Wow. All right. Now, the tour de force of the weekend. Jimmy Reefer has come back with a new Chris Rosen song, updated. And I'm looking at Chris Rosen's face right now. He's so excited. And it's but it's done Schecter style. Let's play this.
Chris Rosen, HuffingtonPost.com, entertainment editor at the HuffingtonPost.com. When it comes to entertainment, Chris knows what's going on. Chris Rosen, HuffingtonPost.com.
Oh, yes. Christopher Rosen, HuffingtonPost.com.
You know what? The new Jimmy Reefer Cake one is better when you play the old one first.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Well, Chris, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Sam. I appreciate it. Now, always a pleasure.
I got to ask you, what is going on? You're sitting there with like a some type of lime green background. The lighting is not, I got to say, not flattering to you whatsoever. You seem like you haven't showered in a long time. You seem like things are going...
No, I just showered this morning. This is my living room. This is my night. This is a wall here.
You don't put up any pictures or what? I don't understand.
It's a very high ceiling, so we have the pictures a little higher than right behind my head.
And you don't go into the office?
Well, I got a little caught up today at home doing work, so I didn't want to miss our hit time. So I stayed home to make sure I got on.
Quite a pro.
Yes.
Now, this must be probably the most busy, exciting time for you in the days leading up to the Oscars, right? Am I right?
You are correct, Sam. It's a very exciting time. We have a lot going on, and it's going to be a great show.
Do you work for the Academy?
What's going to be a great show?
I mean, I'm just watching it, but it's going to be a good show.
So you're in your apartment in New York. You're with the Huffington Post Entertainment. Why aren't you out in California?
Because we don't need to go out. We have other people in California covering, but, you know,
we're here
in New York covering.
I mean, that's got to be the gig, right? I mean, you don't want to be sitting. You're just sitting at home like me. I'm not going to be watching.
So we're going to go into the office and stuff. It's going to be a whole big event. But, yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, but who gets to go as opposed to you?
Well, we have L.A. people. So, you know, my boss went out to L.A. and we have an L.A. reporter out there who's going to be at the event. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you get to go to any award show for the – I mean, you're in New York.
You know, they don't really have award shows in New York, so we don't really
Tony
go.
Tony Awards, the Independent Spirit Awards, none of those?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
The Razzies.
The Razzies. The Streamies, the Shorties, none of them. ESPYs.
No.
No. All right. All right. Well, so let's get right to the Oscar-nominated documentaries. Tell us which documentaries are being nominated for Oscars.
Well, they're actually all pretty good. It was a good year for documentaries. A lot of the good ones did not get nominated. I don't know if you saw Central Park 5 or
I did.
Queen of Versailles.
Yeah.
So there were a lot left off, but right now it looks like Searching for Sugar Man is the favorite. Is about that singer Sixto Rodriguez, who rose to fame in South Africa.
I saw it. And what about the others?
How to Survive a Plague, I kind of think might win because that's also really a good doc that also it has a message and stuff. It's about the AIDS epidemic in the 80s. Other nominees are, I guess, The Gatekeepers, which I haven't seen, Five Broken Cameras, which was in the news this week because of the director, who's a Palestinian co-director, was detained at LAX coming to the Oscars. And the other one is The Invisible War by Kirby Dick.
I got to tell you, I am so disappointed that you knew those movies.
What do you think? I'm not going to know those effing movies?
I actually thought that you wouldn't. Because last time we spoke about the Oscars, you had no idea what the documentaries were.
Well, I mean, that might have been last year. You know, I kind of don't think the documentary category is that great, only because there's it's pretty arbitrary. There's so many documentaries that are really good that don't even get nominated. This year, there so happen to be a lot of good films that are nominated.
You never watch documentaries. How many of those documentaries have you seen?
Only one.
Right. How many documentaries do you think you watched this year?
I watched probably three or four, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's only what you do for your profession. So the three or four. So once every 4 months, you watch a documentary.
Well, you know, when you're having to watch three or four actual movies every week, feature films, it's hard to get in the documentary.
Actual movies?
You know, yeah, when you have to watch Marley and Me, Sam, there's only so much time.
Yeah, I can imagine. When you actually
Who's
have to watch
voice?
Now wait a second. I want to three or four movies a week. Now wait a second. Let me ask you this, okay? I've got to watch one a week. Just essentially so that when people suggest documentary or movies, I watch it. And that's completely off my radar. I mean, aside from having a child, and aside from, then I've got to cover the news. I've got to read books so that I can interview people. And you only have time to watch two or three more movies a week, but you work at the HuffPost media entertainment section?
What are you talking about? You're no way why. Sam, have you seen I've seen every movie nominated for Best Picture. I had to see
That's six movies! That's six movies! I've seen half of them.
Well, that's more. I've still seen more than you. How many movies did you see
last
year?
Yes, but I'm saying that's your job.
Right.
That's your
job. It is my job. So I saw 200 movies while I was also doing my job every day.
What is your job? Your job is to watch movies.
To be an editor, Sam. I'm really arguing with you about my job right now? Get out of here. You're I don't hang up on you.
How can you edit any? What are you going to? Wow, you're getting very sensitive.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. That's what we're going to talk about?
Well,
yeah.
I'm just curious. All right.
You dummy.
Whoa. What are you? So what are the 200 movies you watched this year? Did you watch all nine of the movies that are going to be nominated for the Oscars? All nine of them?
Well, not a more. Not seeing that one.
All right. Well, let's go through the list because I don't work. My business is not entertainment, so I don't watch all the movies, okay?
Right.
What are you doing now?
I'm moving. It doesn't matter. Nobody's seeing this. Continue. Keep talking.
Why are you walking? That's incredibly distracting.
I'm not walking. I'm fixing myself on the couch. I'm sitting up.
You just got stuck on the couch? Are you sweating?
No. No.
He's stuck on the couch. He's all right. So where are you? Are you reading the names of these movies? Do you not know them off the top of your head?
No, I know them off the top of my head. I'm looking at the internet though, and continuing to do other work while we talk.
You're multitasking. Okay, good. All right. So what are the movies that have been nominated for the Oscars?
You want me to just tell you? Amour.
But we mean just tell me. You know, walk me through which one. Okay, Amour. You don't know anything about that one. You didn't see it.
No, I do know everything about it. I just haven't seen it. But Amour is Michael Haneke's film. It won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. It's got a surprising amount of nominations for a foreign film. It could win. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Screenplay.
Why aren't you going to watch it? Because it's foreign?
No, just because I never got around to it. And it's crushingly depressing because it's about two old people dying.
Okay.
I get enough depressing crap on the news. I don't need to watch two old people die in a movie.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So I think it's definitely going to win Best Foreign Film. It doesn't seem like anyone is even talking about the other nominees.
All right.
Have you seen any of the other nominees?
All right.
No, well, I haven't even seen any of those films. And honestly, I could not even name. I know N.O. was one of the nominees in Best Foreign Film. But everyone has talked about it more. That's most likely going to win Best Foreign Film. I kind of think Michael Haneke might win Best Director, because that whole field is wide open. As you might know, Sam, Ben Affleck was not nominated, and I think he would be the favorite in that category
Don't you think there's something sort of, I mean, this is a the idea that you could be talking about who's going to win the Best Director without even having seen the film. Doesn't that in some way sort of like undercut a little bit about like the whole milieu that you're involved in?
Not really, because the movies, it doesn't actually matter. I mean, with the Oscars, frankly, a lot of it doesn't even matter what the movie is, because it just ends up being a thing about politics and campaigning. And, you know, the people are voting. It's basically a big popularity contest.
You're like the you're like the Politico of entertainment, aren't you? It's not the actual product. It's the campaigns around it, right?
Well, I mean, the product this year was surprisingly good, so that's nice, and the movies are great. I think
which you didn't see.
Well, I haven't seen Amour, but I mean, I've seen the rest of them.
Tell us the other ones.
Well, Argo was pretty good. I didn't love it, but I think it's pretty good. It's a nice winner. It was a strong movie. Then there's Beasts of Southern Wild.
Tell us a little bit about Argo. Don't just, you know, whip through it like that. It's Ben Affleck.
Everyone knows about Argo. The movie's been out for 6 months. You don't need to tell me though. I don't need to tell you the plot of Argo.
All right.
But as I said, Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for Best Director, and that was a big shock because he was kind of the favorite, I thought, to at least get a nomination. And as the award season has gone on since the Oscar nominations have come out, you know, Affleck has won every single award, but he will not win on Oscar night. So that's
you think fun. He won those awards because he wasn't nominated?
No, I actually think he won those awards because he was going to win those awards. And I think this year, you know, when the Oscar nominations are voted for, it's like each branch votes for each thing, you know, so like directors are voting for directors, actors are voting for actors. But then for the nominations, for the awards, everyone votes for everything. So there's only like 360 directors who vote for Oscar. And, you know, a lot of people said that, you know, if you want to believe some conspiracy theories, maybe, you know, either everyone kind of thought Ben Affleck was going to get in anyway, so they didn't put him high on their list. That's one. Maybe, you know, the Oscars changed to electronic voting this year. Or maybe the directors who are an older group were not comfortable with that and just didn't vote for the nominations. And that was how Affleck got left off. That's two. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why he probably didn't get nominated. I have a hard time believing that people thought he did a bad job on Argo, especially because it's going to end up probably winning Best Picture.
But all right. Whatever. Well, fair enough. That's Amour.
That's Argo.
What else we got?
Beasts of the Southern Wild, which I kind of hated. I don't know if you saw that movie.
I don't know. I've never even heard of that. That's the first time I've ever heard those words.
It's not.
Yes, it is. I haven't heard it. What is it? What is it about?
It's about a young African-American girl. She lives in this place called the Bathtub. It's kind of like, you know, New Orleans post-Katrina, and she's dealing with her father who's dying. The actress is Kevonzine Wallace, and she was nominated as Best Actress. Also, youngest Best Actress nominee ever.
Never heard of it.
Movie was pretty popular at Sundance last year. It's that kind of film. It's like an indie film. I just did not like it. People love it. You know, good for them.
Right. Good for them. Right. Exactly. I'm really shocked. It sounds exactly like the type of movie you wouldn't like. What is next up on your list?
Django Unchained would be next. That was nominated for Best Picture, Quentin Tarantino's movie. Did you see that one?
I haven't. I mean, that's on my list to see, but I got to wait. I didn't get a free copy. That's the only reason why I saw any of these, because I got a free copy. The SAG.
That movie's great. I absolutely love that movie, but it's not going to win at least Best Picture. But it could win Best Original Screenplay for Tarantino, and maybe Christoph Waltz could win Best Supporting Actor. He's nominated too.
Hmm. Okay, what else?
Then we would have... I'm trying to do them alphabetically in my head, but I guess it would be Les Mis is up next. Les Miserables. Did you see that?
I didn't. I have the DVD, though. They sent that to me for the SAG Awards. Is it? Should I watch it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's very long. Anne Hathaway's the best part, but she's only in it for like the first half hour. And she's going to win Best Supporting Actress. She's nominated, so that's good. Another Best Picture nominee that won't win, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
After that, we have Life of Pi.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
No. What's that one about?
It's about a young boy who
Aronofsky?
Gets shipwrecked.
What's that? Do they renominate Darren Aronofsky's movie?
No, if only. It's based on a book by Jan Martel. Young boy gets shipwrecked on a life raft with a tiger, and it just is his survival story, and there's a little twist at the end.
Yeah, is this a kid's movie? Can kids watch?
You know what? I don't think so. It's PG, but there's some really terribly traumatic scenes, I would say.
No,
you know,
okay, then I won't watch that with my daughter. But is that worth me watching? Should I watch
dies.
That one? Because I think I have that.
Hey, I don't know if I would watch it. Honestly, here? I really liked it.
Well, yeah, don't tell anybody about it. Don't ruin the movie for people.
I'm not. It was in the trailer. The ship sinks.
No, the part you said just 5 seconds ago about why Mila
Which
shouldn't
part?
See the movie about the kid's mom.
The kid's
oh, wait,
mom
don't bring it up.
Don't
bring it up.
As far as you know, the kid's mom dies in the shipwreck.
All right, let's move off of that. Come on, go. All right, so Life of Pi.
No, see it. You could see it in the theater. The 3D was really good.
But, I don't do 3D.
You know, I don't know if you can watch it at home.
I don't do 3D.
Well, you know, there you go.
No way.
Next up is Lincoln. Did you see Lincoln, Sam?
I did see Lincoln. Yes.
Lincoln's a great movie, but I don't think it's going to win. That would be the other movie that could win Best Picture, though. Other
now,
than
why
Argo.
Isn't Lincoln going to win? A lot of people think it's going to win.
You know, because it lost to Argo in every single precursor, basically. There's certain awards that go before the Oscars. So it's like the Screen Actors Guild, the Producers Guild, the Writers Guild, the Directors Guild. And every one of those guilds awarded Argo an award over Lincoln.
So what do you think? Is Spielberg backlash or what?
I don't think it's Spielberg backlash. I mean, the guy's got like 2 Oscars and how many? 8 or 9 nominations. He won an honorary Oscar. I mean, the guy's...
Just people are just like, do something that's more current.
Maybe, or, you know, maybe they just didn't
joking.
Like Argo. They liked Argo more.
I'm joking. Why would people say do something that's more current? Like, Lincoln's been around for a long time. Get a new topic.
No, but I mean, like, I think that the idea of Argo winning would be, like, Lincoln is an old-fashioned Oscar movie. You know, it's exactly what you would think about John Williams' music and Steven Spielberg, and it's a giant period piece, and maybe Argo is a little cooler because it's got, like, you know, Ben Affleck is the director, and it, even though it takes place in the 70s, at least it's not the 1870s
but if,
or 1860s.
Oh, I see.
But if
I
they gave, if they right. gave, if the Oscars gave Affleck the snub, whereas the other award shows didn't, maybe the other award shows are the one looking for the cool film, and it's the Oscars looking for the classic Oscar film like Lincoln. Ever think of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, maybe, but also everyone who votes, most of the people who vote for those other Guild Awards also vote for Argo.
I can't even believe I'm a witness to this conversation. okay, so what comes
next?
Lincoln's
very good. If it wins, that would be cool, too. I think that's a great movie.
After Lincoln is what?
Silver Linings Playbook, I believe, is next.
What do you think?
That's a great movie as well.
Great
you know,
movie?
David
Did you think that was a great movie? I thought that was a good movie.
I thought it was the movie of the year.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a good movie, but I thought it was just sort of like one of those, you know, feel-goody rom-coms that you always talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it was very well done, though, and you know, it's nice to see that kind of movie. It is a feel-good rom-com, but, I mean, those movies usually suck, so to have it be really good, I think, was great.
Yeah, that's
Jennifer Lawrence is nominated for Best Actress. I think she probably will win. Her big competition is, like, Emmanuel Riva from Amour. And Robert De Niro could win Best Supporting Actor. He's
and what about my boy Bradley Cooper?
I love Bradley Cooper in it. I think he's fantastic, but I can't imagine anyone beating Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor for Lincoln.
Yeah, I guess that's a slightly different. Genre of acting, isn't it?
Right. It's tough. I mean, you know, that's the problem with the Oscars. It's like that's Daniel Day-Lewis has won two Oscars. Everyone knows he's a great actor. This is Bradley Cooper's best performance by like a mile, and he goes to like another level basically as a performer. So should he win the Oscar for doing like the best thing he's ever done, or should Daniel Day-Lewis win the Oscar for just doing what Daniel Day-Lewis always does?
Boy, I can't believe we're doing a whole segment on this.
You can make the argument.
Let's go to the last one. Is
Zero Dark Thirty, Sam?
What did you think about that movie?
I love that movie, but, you know, I don't think it's going to win.
Now, why did you love that movie? Like, I watched it, and, you know, I put aside the politics because I try and, watch it. And I found the first half of that movie boring. And then I found that I had no emotional investment in the female character. I didn't care that, you know, I didn't really, like, her whole struggle, there was nothing there.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree. I thought it was a very well done procedural. You know, it did not have the emotional attachment of something like Silver Linings Playbook or even Lincoln, because, you know, I think you're right that Jessica Chastain's kind of closed off in that movie, and probably intentionally so. But, you know, I thought it was really great and such a, you know, it reminded me a lot of Zodiac by David Fincher.
Have you been going to like a bunch of cocktail parties? What are you doing over there, Avi? Because this, everything you got is like this sort of, you sit around and you say this like with everybody at work, and it's just like, Jennifer Chastain was sort of shut off. I would agree with that.
I mean, I'm just telling you what I heard.
Who told you this?
Me. I'm telling you what I
heard. Are people saying, are you just regurgitating what you heard around the office or something?
No, I probably said it around the office. I mean, you know.
What do you mean, you know? What does that mean?
You know, that's the answer, you know. But I think that, you know, I like Zero Dark Thirty a lot. But so, I think it got swift voted this year. I think, you know.
Swift voted? What? Whoa. What the heck does that mean?
It means it kind of got out. The charges of it being pro-torture kind of sabotaged any chance it had to win any Oscars. Because when it was screened for critics back in December, everyone was like, holy cow, this is the movie that's going to win Best Picture, and she's going to win Best Director again, and this is the best movie of the year. And then all the allegations and, you know, the discussion of whether or not it was pro-torture and how accurate it was came out, and that just kind of killed the movie.
Yeah, that's a problem. When you do a movie that's based on...
And that's why, frankly, that's why Lincoln, I think, also got hurt lately, and maybe Argo did not, even though all those films had a lot of historical inaccuracies. But, like, you know,
Jimmy Carter has basically said about Argo that he likes the movie, but it was more about the Canadian ambassador than anything else.
Right. Well, that's true. And they added something at the end of that. Also, the whole last act of Argo is basically fantastically, you know, made up. There was no, like...
Right.
Right. Police officers chasing the plane down
right.
the runway.
That's really hard to imagine that.
Yeah, but I mean, unlike Argo, Zero Dark Thirty totally presented itself as this is exactly how it happened.
Right.
This is the exact portrayal
exactly.
of events.
Right.
Exactly. And same with Lincoln. Lincoln got in trouble. I'm sure you saw that. Joe Courtney, the Connecticut congressman, was like, oh, you know, no, the Connecticut congressman did not vote against the 13th Amendment. And in Lincoln, that they're showing that they are. And, you know, when Tony Kushner came out and was just like, well, too bad. It's, you know, poetic license. I could do whatever I want. And, you know, Steven Spielberg made that choice, too. And it's like, well, yeah, but you're wrong. And then they're giving away Lincoln DVDs to, like, you know, school kids. So
right.
Basically, like, kind of a difficult thing. And that's why I think Argo also, you know, is
so
going to
I think we've learned a good lesson about presenting ourselves in one way and being another way.
What's that?
I think we've learned a good lesson about presenting ourselves as one thing, but actually not being that thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Whoosh.
Can I ask him a question?
Yes. We have a question from the Peanut Gallery.
Ooh.
Who's there?
Michael.
This is Michael.
Michael, what's up?
How you doing? Why do you think Moonrise Kingdom was passed over? I like that movie
a lot. Oh, you know, I really love Moonrise Kingdom. I thought that should have gotten a Best Picture nomination.
All right, I don't even want to hear this conversation. All right. So tell us who's going to win.
I agree with that.
Who's going to – now, you're saying Argo is going to win Best Picture. Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win Best Actor. Who's going to win Best Actress?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence is going to win Best Actress. And then what else have they got?
The best supporting actress would be Anne Hathaway.
Okay. And then best supporting actor.
I'm going to pick Robert De Niro. But I mean, if you also want to see Tommy Lee Jones or Christoph Waltz, that one is kind of like a, you know, pick a name out of a hat, basically.
Right.
Anyone
who cares? Really? I mean, at the end of the day, who cares?
And then
what
best
else?
Best director, you know, it could be Steven Spielberg. It could be Ang Lee. could be David O. Russell. Again, a name out of a hat. I'm picking Michael Haneke because I think, you know, they'll, you know, Steven Spielberg and Ang Lee have already won. So that's the thing with Oscars. They like, you know, they like rewarding other people sometimes.
All right. Well,
what about sound mixing?
Yeah. You got anything on the sound mix?
Probably like Argo. I mean, usually in those categories, it goes with like, you know.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. Seriously.
You burnt.
So forget about it. Forget. Get out of here.
Sam, this is a pleasure. Anybody who wants to watch our, you know, read along with our HuffPost Oscar coverage, HuffPost.com/entertainment on Sunday.
Well, you're not doing on HuffPo Live or whatever it is?
I was on HuffPost Live last week, I think, but I don't know. Probably our senior entertainment editor, Michael Hogan, would be on that.
Yeah, so you just get the dregs. Like, what do you get to cover?
I cover the Oscars. I'm writing all about it. What do you think I'm doing? Well, and also the Spirit Awards. I'm hoping that'll be fun this year.
Oh, so you're actually going to go to the Spirit Awards?
No, I'm in New York. How am I going to go to the Spirit Awards? They're tomorrow afternoon.
All right, whatever, buddy. All right, Chris Rosen.
Enjoy the Oscars.
Bye, Chris. Thank you so much for that deep, deep insight onto the Oscars and the filmmaking and all that type of stuff. Chris Rosen, everyone. All right. Oh, I guess we're going to go a little bit late today. What? Freebie Friday? All right, Freebie Friday. Let's take a quick break. Use some different La Poupée. We'll take a quick La Poupée break. Come back. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. And, of course, you can always IM us at Majority FM. We'll be right back after this short intermission. This short intermission.
I'm pulling up the different La Poupée. Here we go.
We are back. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jimi Hendrix doing La Poupée qui fait non. We will get your calls in just a moment at 646-257-3920. First, this story from The Guardian. Reporting on a story that was carried by the Italian daily newspaper La Repubblica. With two Bs. Supposedly, according to this report, Pope Benedict the, well, I don't know what it is, 16th, is that what he is? Pope Benedict has resigned, or, you know, we all know that, resigned.
What?
Because,
what?
No, the Pope has resigned. But apparently, the Pope took the decision to resign on December 17th, the day he received a dossier compiled by three cardinals delegated to look into the so-called Vatileaks affair. That's when the Pope's butler, Pablo Gabriel, was arrested and charged with stolen and had leaked papal correspondence that depicted the Vatican as a seething hotbed of intrigue and infighting. Let's try that one more time. That's weird. All right. Well, be that as it may.
I like how the butler did it.
The butler did it. The newspaper said that the cardinals described a number of factions including one whose members were, quote, united by sexual orientation. I think you can read that as being gay. In an apparent quotation from the report, La Repubblica said some Vatican officials had been subject to external influence from laymen with whom they had links of a worldly nature, in quotes. The paper said this was a clear reference to blackmail. And the worldly nature, I imagine, is one of carnal knowledge. It quoted a source very close to those who wrote the Cardinal's report as saying everything revolves around the non-observant observance of the sixth and seventh commandments. The seventh enjoins against theft. The sixth forbids adultery, but is linked in Catholic doctrine to the prescribing of homosexual acts. It is unclear what is in that dossier. It is unclear, but apparently it was enough for the Pope to say, I bet a skedaddle or something may blow up in my face.
If it's something worse than formerly being part of Hitler Youth.
Right.
Then
you know you've got a problem. So the Pope, driven out of the popehood, of course, because of the gays. All right, let's go to the phones. Dan calling from New York City. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Hey, Sam. Thank you very much.
How's it going?
Listen, I wanted to chat a little bit regarding the personal finance segment you had a little while ago, and something that really is not brought up enough, and that is that with the advent of all these mutual funds and 401ks and now online trading and everything else, what corporations and capitalism has managed to do is to, you know, expand the investor class into the working class and beyond. Whereas the investor class used to be a very small segment of society, now we have most people now invested in corporate well-being. And I think it's very important to ask exactly what implications does that have. I like to refer to it as stockholder syndrome, because what it does is it basically connects you and makes you feel tied to and empathetic and all of that towards corporations. And corporations, as we should know by now, are basically those forces which are, you know, destroying this planet and certainly tearing apart this country. And so we find ourselves in a situation now where we have stockholder syndrome, especially liberals, and we are invested in our own sort of demise, in my estimation. I wondered whether you could speak to that.
I mean, I think, you know, I don't know that that was the idea necessarily behind it, but I do think that is definitely, without a doubt, at the very least, a byproduct of that. I mean, you could see the obsession with the stock market over the past 20 years that engulfed everybody. You know, there was a Kurt Anderson had a book, Turn of the Century, I think it was, which described New York at that time in the 90s. And the sort of I think your point is a great one, because it and I would say that while people don't necessarily, I don't know if people necessarily have a direct correlation to sort of the health of the corporation is going to benefit us all. But I definitely think that pursuit of money and money becoming an ascendant value and the stock market as the barometer of how well the country's doing at any given point, definitely a function of that. And I think that's a great point. And it's not really one that I think
And do you think it becomes harder to fight against, you know, the corporate forces that may are causing us much harm when we are, you know, personally invested in their health? I think that's a very important question.
Well, I mean, the irony is that buying the stocks does not necessarily really invest in their health. I mean, on some level, there's a perception that it does, but I don't think it actually does. I mean, I think, you know, the stock market is, in many respects, very much untethered from the fundamentals of these corporations. But I think it definitely, look, that was the whole theory with the Bush administration saying that we want to create an ownership society, right? And that's why, in many respects, they were pushing the idea of home ownership so significantly, the idea that, you know, everybody's got a piece of it, and we're all now, you know, you can perceive of yourself as a maker, not a taker, in that respect. And yes, but I think the correlation is I think the relationship is one that is a little bit more obtuse, but I think it definitely contributes to this idea that, you know, the business of America is business, and that I definitely think that it has contributed to this notion of money being the ascendant value, and of corporations being the sine qua non of a healthy society. I think. I mean, I think you're right. It's a great point, and I don't know that I've ever sort of perceived it in that way.
You don't think it has an effect on an individual or a group level, that we are all sort of invested on a financial level in corporations? You don't think that that has some effect as far as our ability to actually fight against corporate forces?
I am less convinced
it's
of that.
It's a lot of cognitive dissonance. If you have $100,000 in your 401k, and you know that this society is heading down the wrong path, and you know that corporations are at fault, is it quite as easy then to, like, fight against something knowing that you might lose half of your savings?
I don't know that people necessarily make that connection, but I can tell you there's no reason to believe that that connection to the corporation is any different than it would have been let's say the early 60s. You know, everybody's working for a corporation at that point, and their pensions are, I mean, although the point taken insofar as it was a defined benefit, and maybe perhaps part of the reason why most of the agitation against the establishment came from people who had yet to sort of enter into that world. But I don't know that someone says, hey, you know, I've got a 401k, which depends upon, and because I don't think that people, when they buy a mutual fund, necessarily even know what's in it. And I don't think that people are as broadly invested as you think that they may be. And I don't think they make that one-to-one correlation. But I think in general, though, there is definitely, because the extension of the investment class, not so much to the working class, but to the media class, and sort of like those people who are in the top 20 percentile, I would say, of our income classes and our wealth classes, are probably more heavily invested than they were, and they, in many respects, dictate sort of our culture. So I think it has that effect. I don't know that it's as one-to-one as you're making it out to. Although, you know, I'm open to the idea of it, but that's just my sense.
Well, I think there have been studies based on Congress people and how their stock ownership has affected their voting, and it strikes to me not that too much of a leap to imagine that, you know, people aren't quite as ready, gung-ho, to take on the corporations when they know that, you know, their own personal wealth is dependent on those corporations.
I mean, it's possible. I'm not saying that it's not possible, but I can tell you that when a lobbyist from the corporation that you own stock in comes up to you and says, this is going to be really good for us, that's a far deeper connection than sort of the vague notion, if I'm hesitant to sort of perceive the problems that corporations create because I'm tied into, you know, a mutual fund may own some shares of their stock. It's a different relationship. But in general, I think there's something to it. But I appreciate the call, Dan.
All right. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks. Let's go to Luke from Chicago. Welcome to the program, Luke. Luke, are you there? Luke. I don't know what happened to Luke. All right, let's go to the IM folks, starting with Bob Flav. Hey, Sam, movie review day. Once again, I will recommend Shade and The Grand. Good, because I forgot that you had recommended those in the past. Shade and The Grand. In the coming months, I imagine I'm going to be watching more movies, although not to imply that I've been able to go out. So I don't know, but we'll have a little more time off, and we'll see. But say hi to everybody. Bye. Oh, Richard Kind in it. Oh, Richard Kind is also in. I ran into Richard Kind today, and he is headed out to L.A. because he's in Argo. And I should say, back in the day, he used to hang with Bradley Cooper. So I know two people in Oscar-nominated films.
Double Name Drop Friday.
Name Drop Friday.
He was good in Argo. He's funny.
Richard Kind.
Yeah, I mean, he was only in one scene.
But, yeah, he does well.
He played this really schmucky guy very well.
All right, let's go to, let's try one more time. Luke from Chicago, are you there? Why am I not hearing Luke? Oh, there you go. Luke, you there?
Oh, I'm not Luke, though.
Oh.
I think it's somebody else.
Okay, who's this?
That was Jay from...
Ryan from New Jersey.
Oh, Ryan from New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to, call up the show and just say that the reason why I really got into politics during college, I'm finishing up right now in my undergraduate degree in biology, but Noam Chomsky is like the biggest inspiration politically. And when I was watching Obama give his State of the Union, he had spoken for the first half about the economy and had laid out a bunch of different ideas, and all of that was significant. But in his second part, though, he almost had no real, his foreign policy and what he was going to do about drones and about, civil liberty issues and about lives overseas that, wouldn't be U.S. citizens, but that he kind of is really concerned about, bombing them. I think that it's very clear that Obama is not a liberal. And I know that you and Cliff were talking before about him trying to help, basically curb the tide against the Tea Party. But he is conservative, though. I mean, he is in this neocon fashion. And, for anybody who needs more evidence, if you go right onto Noam Chomsky's site, he doesn't believe in Obama's message. And, I'm not buying into, Alex Jones's conspiracy theory. But I just wanted to say that, Noam Chomsky details all this out and about the foreign policy of the United States and, just to give your listeners a heads up.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think that I've never thought that. I should say there's been times where I certainly had hope, but I think it's been very clear since very early on in his administration that he's not a liberal. I mean, I think in terms of economic policies, he's center right, I think, in many respects. I wouldn't call him a neocon. Because I don't think that he is as actively interventionist as the neocons. Now, with that said, the spectrum of foreign policy in this country has moved also to the right. And so, I think in many respects he's one of these realpolitik type of guys. Henry Kissinger is maybe not quite Kissinger, but one never knows. But yes, no, I agree. I mean, look, we're an imperialist country, and I don't know that anybody would argue against that. I think that even people, I don't think that you get even people on the right who would argue against that. They would simply say, why is that a bad thing? I think it's in terms of foreign policy, there are some things, frankly, that I didn't like the procedure. I thought that he should have gone to Congress to get authorization, but I thought the Libyan intervention, to the extent it was, was something that we should do, and basically because the UN had signed off on it. And it found that
It's the point that I'm basically trying to make is that it's not easy being a progressive right now.
No kidding, dude. No kidding. I agree. And I think or to the left of that. But, you know, I don't know. Well, there's been times in this country where it has been. But, yes, I agree. I think the most important thing, you know, in the context of when we're talking about Obama going after the Republicans, I'm only look to the extent that I am a I don't know, fan is the right word, but to the extent that I am supportive of the Democratic Party, it is only to the extent that they can be a the best shot at being a vehicle for progressive ideals. And I my estimation of their capacity to do so has certainly gone down over the past 5 years. But with that said, I still haven't found a better vehicle, at least in terms of national politics. And you know, I do think that as the Republican Party becomes less of a viable of national force, that the argument becomes between the center and the left. And that's the yeah. one that I'm hoping to see. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. And maybe I'm a little bit nitpicky on the terminology. But, yes, yeah. I don't think that Obama is has any designs to roll back the American empire in any respect. I mean, I think he might be going about it in a way that he thinks is more efficient and less bloody. It's not necessarily no blood, but I think he perceives it as being, you know, the least bloody way of maintaining our empire. I don't necessarily agree with him, but or yeah. I agree with the premise that we should be doing that.
Before, when you and Cliff were just talking about him having to go to the pulpit in order to reach out and gain political, you know, attention to either environmental issues or economic issues, or if he did ever kind of go into his foreign policy method going into the future, I mean, it just has to be said that as far as the, you know, as far as the whole, like, socialist, like, conspiracy theory, I mean, it's a complete joke from the standpoint that he is very big business.
Oh, yeah.
And I really am concerned about, yeah. The Keystone Pipeline is concerning.
Yes.
You know, I think the point is just made that he really doesn't plan on pushing a hardcore progressive ideology.
No,
it is
of course.
Concerning. So, yeah.
Of course. But it is what it is. It's you know, on the spectrum, it's better than Mitt Romney is my estimation. But I appreciate the call.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Yeah, thank you.
All right, let's go to the back to the IMs. Left Coast Marcus, they let Oscar Pistorius out on bail but kept his legs in custody so he won't run. Netflix recommendation, the BBC series Sherlock. So far, 2 or 3 episode seasons. Nothing like that RDJ tripe. I don't know what that stands for. An excellent series with actual script and real acting. Erbowitz, I know what people are what you're going to say about the Pope. I saw this coming from the beginning. It had scandal written all over it. The Pope is stepping down to spend more time with his family. Sam, my 5-year-old son, his name is Leo. If you name your son Leo, it might help me to listen to your show more in the car when I'm with my son who prefers the Pixies over you. Well, he's got good taste. Leo has been in the mix. With 2 kids, I'm like you and only get to watch movies on Netflix, but I've heard on good authority that Beasts of the Southern Wild is an incredible movie. If I had a short list of movies to see, it would definitely be on it, but I have 2 kids, so I don't even get a short list. Just wait. Jabbles 1001, for once I find myself agreeing with Ann Coulter of all people. Did you catch her act on Stossel last night? Libertarians are pussies for not the, for the reasons she outlined. The doctrine of selfishness they practice makes them socially isolated and so scared of society they have to hide in their homes with their guns, drugs, and porn. Since they never leave self-imposed prisons, they have no sense of reality and what it takes to live in a socially, mainly collective ideals for social prosperity. Yeah, I don't think that was what Ann Coulter's point was. Carton Dangerous, thanks, Obama. I'll check that out. Sima Sidhu, Sam, Seamus from Austin, tried to call in a couple days back and had trouble. My question was whether we are prepared to fight the fight to help other lower-income people not helped by minimum wage hikes. Entry-level soldiers, Social Security recipients, pension retirees, and others, fixed-income people have to deal with an increasing cost of goods. In the event that we raise the Social Security, minimum wage, I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but I'm not sure I fully understand what the point is. Let's go to, sorry about that, Jay from Connecticut. Welcome to the program, Jay.
Hi, Sam.
Hi,
Jay. I got my interest piqued. I'm in New Haven, actually. I don't know if that counts as Connecticut.
Well, I understand.
I was listening to your earlier caller talking about the stock market and the ownership society. And this is something I think about. I happen to work for one of the largest corporations on Earth, but I'm also a stakeholder, and I'm also a big customer. And what I've learned about this having the public take over a lot of the stock burden of these companies is that I think it has really freed the upper executives to add the stakeholders to the list of people for whom they have contempt. Corporations always have contempt for their workers. And after World War II, they developed contempt for their customers. And in the recent past 30 years, they've basically turned on their stakeholders as well. And I think that right now you have corporations just as these big fiefdoms for a small group of...
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that the whole, that go back to that Bill Lozanic interview from a year or two ago, where, you know, the ideas of the tax regime and the notion of stock options basically incentivized corporate executives and board of directors to run these companies as basically... I mean, it's in some way, it's almost like analogous to derivatives. Like the company is there, but the way they make money is off of the shadow of the company. And in that case, you know, so if they can raise profits short term, mid term, they can make a bundle. It doesn't make a difference if that runs the company into the ground. It doesn't make a difference what it does long term in terms of any real stakeholders. And I would include in those stakeholders the communities that those corporations are operating in. And obviously the workers, like you say, and I think on some level, you know, sort of the suckers who still think that, you know, holding, you know, this is a solid company. I'm going to buy the stock and I'm going to hold it for everywhere. I've got blue hair, that type of thing, you know, and, you know, the kind that your grandmother's like, I bought you 10 shares in GE 60 years ago and never, ever sell it. You know, that was the thing back in the day. And so, yes, I agree. I think I think these corporations are being run, as a function of basically creating profit in these sort of side businesses that these executives have, which is their own sort of, stakes in the company. And they run the company in a way that enhances the way that they get their payoffs. And that's a big problem.
Yeah, I was reminded while you were speaking to the previous caller of that scene in the Hudsucker Proxy when Paul Newman is lamenting the notion of the great unwashed being able to buy stock in the company that he runs. And it was, I guess, a prevailing attitude at one time that working people shouldn't even have the opportunity to have ownership. So the tide has definitely turned, and they've turned that to their advantage. I'm reminded of when the Bell system was broken up. At the time, nobody squawked louder than the phone company, but now they're making money hand over fist,
right?
Without any regulations by and large that they used to be controlled by. You know, they used to be heavily regulated,
right?
So. They find a way,
appreciate the call,
I agree
Jake.
With you.
Got to jump. Appreciate the call, buddy.
All right.
Bye-bye. Wow, I love Dre's reaction to that. All right. NY Kate, upstate. Hard to believe this is an important, pressing story. Lance Armstrong faces a powerful new adversary, the United States government. The Justice Department will notify a federal court Friday that it's joining one of his former racing teammates and suing him for using Oh, my God. Good thing we're going to be cutting back on the Justice Department probably as part of the sequester. Good thing they still have time for this. God forbid they go after any bankers.
This endless defense of Lance Armstrong from you is, like, appalling.
Yes.
It's disgusting. Actually, I was thinking, both of my grandparents, no money in the stock market. Very skeptical of the stock market.
Good for your grandparents. They remember the Depression. Bush and Cheney, phew, what a relief. Texas banned shooting immigrants from helicopters. You have to take out Skynet at the source. Didn't the Terminator movie show teach you anything, Louie? Oh, yeah. That's a Go-Mart thing. Oh, right. Delusional Bernanke, there is no bubble. We have never had a decline of housing prices on a nationwide basis. What? Hold it. You're a progressive, Sam? Since when? Keep voting. My girlfriend participated in a performance with a touring group of some of the country's best belly dancers last night. It was a great show. Just thought it would share this music because it effing rips. I will check
it. I like the happiness now. Now there's some like fun in the randomness. It's great.
Yeah. Let's see what we got here. There you go. There's the belly dancing music.
Where is she from, Bush and
Chief? Bad Wagon, Beasts of Southern Wild, great movie. Rosen is the worst movie reviewer ever. Mighty Rick. Jesus, how does a full-time film critic not watch all the movies up for Oscar consideration? Plus, he gives us spoilers. Worst movie critic ever. Lawyer Matthew, I would borrow the Life of Pi DVD when you're done. I don't know if I have that one, to be honest with you. Rypop Phil, the idea that we blame Republicans for all this turmoil in the House and the Senate is disingenuous. Democrats, Obama and Emanuel worked hard to kill the 50-state plan that took back the House and the Senate in 2008. Getting rid of Alan Grayson and House members of progressive politics was a priority. It was important to the DCCC to stop these people rather than give the fear right-wing nut jobs that they gave the House so they could project their conservative interests. It continued in 2012 when they didn't mind fund challenges against Cantor, Ryan, or McKeon. I mean, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, I don't know. I think there's some truth to that. Argo won't win because it teased us with the premise of Disco but didn't deliver. Blow up in my face? Ooh, says Uzhub. Yeah. Nathan Flowers, screenplay for Lincoln was amazing. The acting was predictably good. I don't give a crap about the Oscars. Zero Doc 30, give me a fucking break, and no love for Cloud Atlas. The Academy lacks any imagination. These people are philosophically bankrupt. Well, I know. But, I mean, if you look at the Oscars and expect some measure of integrity, you're really barking up the wrong tree. I mean, it's like finding out that the those top model competitions that they used to have was just a popularity contest.
Really?
Juan Miguel. For TV, I recommend The Yard on Hulu. Cats 9. Does anyone remember Enron? The stock market is for suckers. If workers withdraw or borrow from their 401k retirement, will be short-lived, and many of will either return to work or find a way to live on $1,200 per month on Social Security. Dr. Radmanthes. Economically, Obama is a neoliberal. That has nothing to do with conservatism. Reagan was a neoliberal as well. It was every president since. Neoliberalism means free trade in the sense that, yeah, that's how I would say center-right, that American corporations get access to foreign markets while unions and workers are disempowered. The same vein as Britain's liberalism 19th century. As I understand it, neoconservatism is just a Kissinger-like realpolitik in order to expand American political military. No. Neoconservatism is actually about the idea that you can bring freedom and democracy by invading other countries. I mean, I think the purest form of neoconservatism was the Iraq War. I love Sam Cedar. What names are on your final list for your son? Right now, we got Theo. We got, as in Theodore. We got maybe Max. I don't know. Saul is up there, which I also like. Middle names are Arthur, William. You know, I mean, the reason why I like Saul is because I had a great uncle, Saul, who was quite a character and very smart guy, had a lot of integrity, and also was still going to rock concerts literally at age 90, not because he liked the rock. He just liked to see what was going on with the kids. He was at adult education at age 100 because he wanted to bone up on stuff. And
what was the last rock show he went to?
I mean, In his 90s, I think he went to Slayer at the Worcester Centrum back in. He would go to, you know, they would wear earplugs, he and his wife, Ruth, who was in her 80s at the time, and they wanted to just see what was going on. And it always caused a stir, you know, like they're, you know, they looked old. So I don't know. I just like the idea of, you know, being able to say to the kid, you know, be able to give them some connection to the past. And I've got old film of him in the 30s, you know, like they had a 16 millimeter camera and he was that type of guy who liked to tinker with stuff. And so, you know, so I don't know.
I see it runs in the family.
Clower, if the caller works for who I think he does, I think his employer is uniquely adversarial towards their employers more than any other company I know of. Well, I don't know how more cryptic any of that conversation could be. Let's go. Let's try it again. Luke from Chicago. Are you there, Luke?
Sam, I'm here. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
You can hear me well.
Yeah, I can.
Excellent. Hey, thanks for playing that clip of McCain. I hadn't actually heard that, but I did read that she responded and said something about getting assault weapons and high-capacity magazines off the streets, and I guess there was an equally thunderous applause. So a fairly divided audience. But, you know, I got to agree with Grandpa Munster. I think he's right that nothing's going to happen. Nothing meaningful is going to happen. And, you know, everyone kind of mocks the NRA's record on, you know, their candidates that they elected. But maybe their real power lies in the votes and not who cast them. Because I was looking into the hearing that was a couple weeks ago. I didn't pay much attention to it when it was happening and kind of wanted to follow up. I thought there was, you know, pretty extensive testimony, maybe some experts from, you know, public health or criminology. There were five witnesses.
Right.
Two of which, Gail Trotter and Wayne LaPierre, I mean, we don't need to talk about them. But the other three, Mark Kelly, obviously, the Americans for Responsible Solutions, they're pro-gun. They want to limit assault weapons. Limit, not ban. That's on their website. They want to limit high-capacity magazines, and there's four background checks. Not much details there. Then, of course, there was Jim Johnson. He was the chief of police in Baltimore. Pro-Second Amendment, his words on his website. And he wants to ban assault weapons and ban high-capacity magazines, but their statement of policy page is very, very weak on that. And then there was David Koppel, I think is his name, Cato Institute. He essentially blamed the legislation preventing the ability to unwillfully commit someone to a mental institution, you know, because he wants to go back to the 50s and 60s where you just put somebody in a straitjacket and, you know, hold them against their will. But there was no one, you know, questioning Heller. There was no one wanting to regulate handgun, like cars. There was no one remotely to the left of them. And to me, this was right out of Obama's 1.0's negotiating playbook. You know, you start close to your opponent's demands, and then meeting them in the middle is essentially giving them everything.
The Democratic Party still has a still allergic to gun control because of a narrative that came out of the 2000 elections that Gore lost Tennessee because of gun control. And I think there was actually a couple other examples that people cited. And there's no real data to support that, but I think you're right. I mean, I think there is a sense amongst the Democratic establishment that this is a no winner, and I think you're right. I think McCain is right based upon, you know, guys like Harry Reid. I don't know if Harry Reid will even bring up an assault weapons ban vote. So I think the best that we're going to see, at least at this juncture, is going to be an expansion of background checks. This is the best, I think, of an expansion of background checks and perhaps an expansion of the, or I should say, making them a little bit deeper. In other words, allowing for more cross-referencing with other government entities when that goes into this background check. I think that's the best that we're going to get out of it now. And we're just going to have to, I mean, hopefully gun control advocates will say this is not enough. We need to do more because then, you know, we'll go through another couple of years of more mass killings and increased gun violence. And of course, you know, you're right. Nobody's paying attention to the gun violence that happens in urban areas. Nobody's really paying attention, obviously, to you know, what happens with suicides and whatnot, and then we're just going to have to wait. You know, so that's the reality of it. I mean, you know, I don't know what else to say unless people start voting in a really explicit way on that issue. And, you know, I know even for myself, I'm far more engaged in many respects by issues of economic, you know, of an economic nature. So it's a tough row to hoe, as I've been told to say.
Right, but it gets me that 40 years later, you know, a Republican presidential candidate is talking about overturning Roe versus Wade, and Heller is, what, 2 years old?
Yeah.
And it's already just accepted as law, and it's no one's questioning it. Everyone says that the Second Amendment guaranteed everyone the right for everything short of,
I think, listen, you know, I think the Democratic establishment welcomed it. I think they welcomed it. I mean, that's why, like,
yeah.
I don't even hear. I've been on TV with gun control advocates, and you know they're saying I think really something's going to happen. I said, but what about Heller? And the Heller was the 2010 case, right? And what was the 2008 case? These cases, and this is what I was arguing to the guy on the phone yesterday. Is like, you know, it never gets cited because except for the extent that I think, you know, the Democratic establishment in some respects was like, okay, good. You know, we got this off the table. It's not even an issue of dispute anymore. So I don't know. I think the politics of this are very weird because, you know, gun control can be adopted by someone like Joe Scarborough so that he sounds, you know, normal to people. It's, you know, or frankly, Michael Bloomberg, so that he can sound, you know, sort of there is this sort of, you got to keep an eye out on this sort of dichotomy between liberal social issues and or so-called liberal social issues and liberal economic issues, because the liberal social issues always, whether or not they actually even get resolved, and, you know, look, the abortion thing has animated the right wing in this country for 30, 40 years. They are the people in the know are just as worried about it being overturned completely as those of us on the left, because they lose a huge issue for them. You know, if gun rights become, I mean, if sensible gun reform could be adopted in some measure by, you know, sort of the social liberal set, they may be happy about it. I don't know. The politics of it are very strange, I think. But I appreciate the call, Luke.
You bet, man. Sorry for the difficulties. Yeah. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's do this. I thought he wouldn't be able to call in today. Jeremiah, welcome to the program.
Hello, Sam.
Jammo?
Hello, Sam.
Are you doing your Chris Rosen impression?
Sam, this is Doug calling, and I just want to tell you, we've got tabs on you and your staff.
You're mocking the guy who called in yesterday. You. Okay. You all right, Jammo?
Wait a minute, Sam. Then there's something else I want to ask you. What's an Oscar?
What's an Oscar? All right, Jeremo, you're making me far more nervous than that guy who called yesterday. All right, yeah, Jeremo.
Yeah, I was so touched by that call from Doug yesterday. You know, I just had to try to revive it.
I understand. Yeah, that was creepy, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really creepy. But you know something? He's got to get a life, man.
Yeah.
He needs a life, that poor guy.
Yeah. I mean, I suspect, it doesn't matter. But, all right. Well, Jemma.
God bless him. I hope he gets a life. Take care. Sammy, have a good weekend and good luck with everything going on.
All right, you too, buddy. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
You bet.
When Jeremy didn't call in before, it got a little depressing after a while. Kyle, I was so tempted to call in. You can't keep bringing Rosen on. Brynhild, Leo is the name of one of the children of the uber yuppie couple in 30-something. Maybe that's the first thing that comes to mind for me. May not be a problem for you, too. I just wanted you to be informed. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okajik, hi, Sam. Long time, but I love the sound of your Uncle Saul, but I hate that name. I think your Max is the coolest name of your choices. Well, it's actually S-A-U-L, which I don't know if that helps.
Max is a very, like, you know, 90s got his kid running down the street with his skateboard in his hand and his bright colored t-shirts.
Yeah.
That's what I picture with Max.
Yeah. I don't know.
Bart Simpson thing?
I don't know.
Bart Simpson
thing. Anakin is really going to be the one that I'm going to go with, though. Without racism against blacks, maybe they would be able to vote instead of being in jail, and then the workforce and the labor market would be 95% in red of less than 65%. Then even a 10% unemployment rate would mean 84% of people in the economy contributing taxes instead of wasting resources in jail. If we end white hate fear of blacks, then all that fear money to the GOP and gun industry can be used for health care and education. There would seem to be more resources for health care and Social Security, but I am not hopeful. Indeed. 108. America's Fighting Dinosaur. Better than most of those Oscar picks. At least it will be. This is a Kickstarter. Let's go. Dr. Radmanthes. Yeah, neoconservatives like PNAC, a group, complain they want to spread democracy, but I see this as a thin veneer over a basic real politic, power politics, expanding U.S. empire. Yes, in many respects. Crystal Count. Avid lozenge user Eric Alterman went as far as telling you the effective wedge factor abortion has hurt the progress of the left since the 70s, didn't he? The gun issue sort of fits that paradigm for Democrats, it seems. Yeah, maybe. Bush and Chains, I'll do one more. I've told you that I meld, dude. You got to follow Friday to the good shit. I'm jonesing to get another final I Am of the Week award. All right, well, then hold on. Let's go to Kyle. Name suggestion, Beast Cedar. And the final I Am of the Day.
Wow.
Something's wrong. Wow. Wow, I can't even turn it off.
You want me to turn it off?
Yeah. Wow, something's wrong with that iPad. The final I Am of the Day goes to Bush and Chains. Going to find music like that on iCult's iTunes proprietary site. You're not going to find music like that on iCult's iTunes proprietary site. Saul, didn't he kill a lot of Christians? Good on that. And that is the way we're going to end the week. On Monday, we're having the executive director of Kick the Can on the program. On Tuesday, I think we're going to have Susan Crawford. So have a great weekend, everybody. See you then.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick. Shifting in and out of gear, waiting for
somehow